say a little bit, probably holistically, about the first Aliyah of Parshas Bamidbar, which is the first Aliyah of Sefer Bamidbar. And many of the psukim are names. It's a whole discussion as far as Shnai Mikra V'Yachad Targum, about to what extent is there an obligation to read the Targum when the Targum isn't adding too much other than translating the name. And a little bit, that's the point, the confluence of names and numbers, which to a certain extent conflict with each other, contradict each other, at least in their imagery. And that's a part of the point. And we'll just say a few words about maybe two hashgafic themes that present themselves at the beginning of Bamidbar, which itself presents itself now, that the idea that Parshas Bamidbar is assigned to this time right before Shavuos, it's an idea that is brought in the Sifrei Halacha, the Tur in Aruch Chaim and Tav Chav Ches, brings this idea that Bamidbar is read before Shavuos, and gives extra emphasis for us, even if we're not laning actually the Shabbos, but again, to be aware of the themes of the parsha. Apparently there is a juxtaposition that's significant here, that Bamidbar should be before Shavuos. And the Torah quotes a way to remember this, Menu Vatzru, that we should, Vatzru is Atzeres, a reference to Shavuos, and Menu is a reference to the idea of counting. And we'll say more about counting in a moment and the tensions that are inherent in the idea of counting. But the symbolism of Menu Vatzru, the Paris Yosef HaChadosh quotes from the Sefer Torah Siruchim, that it's a way of making sure that everybody's here, making sure, taking attendance, calling the roll, so to speak, and making sure that everybody is a part of it. And that's necessary before Shavuos, before Kabbalah Satorah. And we know that we have a theme that the Achdus of Klal Yisrael is integral to the process of Kriyas Satorah, that the unity of the Jewish people, Ki'isha Echad, B'Lev Echad, V'Yichon, is all central to the theme of Shavuos. And perhaps also we could compare this and parallel this to an idea which I think is also brought in the Paris Yosef HaChadosh, but elsewhere, and we can relate it to what's said here, that we also have an idea as far as the placement here, that we want to put the klalos, put the tochacha behind us. So, for example, when it comes to Parshas Kisavo, which contains tochacha and rebuke, so we have that davka read before Rosh Hashanah, and we associate that with the idea of Tichla Shana Vikilosa, let the previous year and all of its tzaras, let them all be assigned to last year, and let's start a new year fresh. And we find that that idea is also brought up here, that last week we had B'chukosai. B'chukosai should also be before the new year, which is interesting on a couple of levels, because it is paralleling Rosh Hashanah and Shavuos to some degree, and saying just like Rosh Hashanah is clearly a new year within Halacha, so Shavuos also is a type of renewal. And if we're going to receive the Torah, we are defined in a new way from that point on. And it's as if before Shavuos and after Shavuos are considered to be separate years. So we have our laning schedule the way it is, so that Kisavo should be before the start of a new year, but also B'chukosai should be before the start of the new year. But then if we want to carry that parallel further, so there is what more to add to that, because we say Kisavo should be before Rosh Hashanah, but it's not immediately before Rosh Hashanah. We have Nitzavim in between Kisavo. Sorry. That idea, I think I don't, okay. That idea that we have Nitzavim in between Kisavo and Rosh Hashanah is interesting because why do we have to do that? And we seem to go out of our way to do that because Nitzavim Vayelech, which really should be joined, and there's much behind that, is sometimes seemingly artificially split up in order to put Nitzavim before the reading of before Rosh Hashanah. So there, the Paras Yosef HaChadosh quotes an idea that it's not simply that if we want the Klalos to end, that we simply have to transition into a new year and there's nothing to think about. It's that there has to be something that changes from one year to the next. And Shalom, we know, and Achdus is a kapara. So before Rosh Hashanah and after Kisavo, we read Atem Nitzavim, Atem Nitzavim Hayom Kulchem, you are all here together as one. And maybe that's the idea here also, that if we're going to have a transition into a better year, so it's not only that we have Chukosai assigned to the previous year, but in between we have Bamidbar, we have the idea that we should all be counted together, and that's necessary for it to be a meaningful transition into a positive new stage. And the idea of Menu, as we alluded to before, is a little bit of a tricky one, because we have a big tension about counting. And the book we call Bamidbar, so in English, it's known as the Book of Numbers, and that's not necessarily something we don't sign on to, because we also find that one of the names of the Sefer, in addition to Bamidbar, as Rashi notes in his commentary to Maseches Yuma, Daf Samachas, that this Sefer is called the Chumash HaPikudim, the Book of Counts, so the Book of Numbers. So that is a central theme. And yet, we also know that we have a big aversion to counting, and the Gemara tells us in Maseches Yuma and Daf Chav Beis that there's a prohibition to count Jews, and we also find, as we are particularly sensitive to at the moment, that there is a magefa chas v'shalom, there is a plague that's associated with counting the Jews, and yet here we find that we are told to count, however indirectly, and that there is a chiba, that there is a preciousness and appreciation for the Jews that is expressed through counting. So there's a tremendous tension, both halachically and hashgafically. We're not supposed to count. We go out of our way to count. We have to count, but we have to be careful not to count directly. It's dangerous to count, and there's a lot written about this. There's extensive halachic literature about the question of a census and how it could be done, and whether it's permissible, it's only permissible at Tzorech, what justifies it. It's a pretty extensive halachic topic. And even just philosophically, what exactly is the message here? So it seems like we have a very delicate balance, that on the one hand, to see somebody as a number rather than a name is something which is dehumanizing, is something which in the past century we've come to associate with some of the worst crimes against the Jewish people, the reducing of individuals to numbers instead of their names. And in fact, one of the efforts to remember the victims of the Holocaust is called the opposite, names, not numbers. And there is certainly a symbolism there that we have to be very careful to avoid. But at the same time, there's also the notion that being connected to the totality of the Jewish people and being recognized as a part of that unit, which the counting can also suggest if it's done properly, is a crucial theme. And Rabbi Rudinsky, in his Sichos, he makes reference to what Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky notes in his commentary to Chumash, and he expands on it, that here we find that the establishment of the Degolim, of the flags for each Shevet, so here this is something which emphasizes the uniqueness of every Shevet. And at the same time, it's something that is emphasized here specifically, and not, let's say, at the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim, because in order for that uniqueness to have an expression, so we needed the Mishkan, we needed a mission, we needed a context in which to unify everyone and to allow that uniqueness to have expression. And Rabbi Yaakov, I believe, gives the comparison to the different parts of the body. So every part of the body has a different function. Ear and a nose have no connection to each other. They have no similarity to each other. They do completely different things. And yet, I should say better, they do have a connection, that they are only able to do those functions when they're all connected to the body. And a disembodied nose and a disembodied ear is useless. And therefore, it's only when there is a joint mission in the context that all these distinct roles are able to find expression. So it's specifically here, once there is a Mishkan, and once there is now a direct mission and context for that mission for the Jewish people, that it makes sense for their individuality all to express itself, and we count them to see them as a part of that unit, but not to reduce their identity to a number. So having that balance both hashkafically and halachically is a big challenge, and yet nonetheless that seems to be a part of what we find here. And it's interesting that so on the Sefer Kamata Likhi, there's a piece there from Rav Yigal Rosen where it discusses the fact that the Torah restates the numbers here, even though it's the same numbers as before. And the Ramban has a comment which also has resonance for us right now, as we're so carefully watching statistics and we're hoping for numbers to get better and for there to be no losses as the next day comes, or fewer losses. So the Ramban notes that the Torah, by telling us these numbers again, and you see the numbers are the same, that the Torah is emphasizing that here the Jews went 20 days, and there's a big population. You think statistically the numbers should have changed a little bit. Some people should have died, just statistically, and yet apparently nobody died from the count till now. And that's interesting. Why is that something that had to happen? It's apparently a nace. What was the purpose of that nace? And he discussed there, and we have to see how we can relate to this idea, that here at the establishment of the Shvatim, so we're seeing that the particular populations of the Shvatim, and I mean their establishment in their sections, that part of their identity is how they are composed, how they are comprised, and that's apparently a part of what is provided for them as their context, and that's part of God's plan, and it's being emphasized that that's part of God's plan, that we see that that's being preserved somewhat miraculously, at least until they're able to establish the beginning of their functioning as Shvatim. And that's a very interesting idea, and I think one of the relevances that has for us is just to realize that we're all different from each other, and we all come from different contexts and different backgrounds and with different challenges and with different strengths, and all of those packages are how we're meant to function and how we're meant to grow and how we are meant to accomplish what we're going to accomplish. And just like Klal Yisrael needs different Shvatim in order for it to be Klal Yisrael, and each Shevet needs to have its own set of circumstances in order to accomplish what it can, so too that's true for each of us as individuals, and it's true within our circumstances. So now we think about how we're in such constrained circumstances and things are so different from what we would have expected, and we're looking at a complicated summer and who knows how long this is going to last. But perhaps it's also helpful to appreciate that whatever the challenges in which we find ourselves, that is the context that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is providing for us to maximize who we're meant to become and to fulfill our unique tafkid. A part of that is the adapting to the challenges of the circumstances, and that this is how we're going to grow, and this is how we are going to continue to develop our unique potential, and that's something that we can embrace and work towards. And that really brings us to the next theme of this opening section in this opening aliyah, that the name that we do use, so we more commonly call the Sefer Bamidbar, and the notion of the desert as the opening imagery of the Sefer, and also of the Parsha leading us into Shavuos. So there is much commentary about that, about the Torah being given in the Midbar, and about us reading Bamidbar right before we commemorate the giving of the Torah. And we find in Chazal different ideas as to what the imagery of the Midbar is meant to convey to us. So, for example, on the one hand, the Medrash tells us that the Torah is given here in the Midbar and is associated with the Midbar, and it's also associated with fire and with water in different places. And the Medrash says all of these things are free, to a certain extent at least. And the idea is that the Torah is free. But the Medrash then goes on to say that just like the Midbar is ownerless, is hefker, so too the Torah only is available to somebody who's mafkir himself, somebody who really makes himself ownerless as if to be ready to be taken over by the Torah. And it seems to be a contradictory message. Is it free or is it something which you kind of have to give up everything for? And the Rosh Yeshiva of Keren Biavner of Goldwich quotes from the Sfas Emes the idea that there's a distinction between the learning of the Torah. The Torah is available for free, but to be kona the Torah, to actually acquire the Torah, that takes a tremendous amount of effort. That takes a commitment that is really very, very focused and very devoted. But he expands on the idea, if I understood him correctly, to say that it's still free on some level, because this isn't about giving up of yourself. This is about taking what you are and developing it and making it everything that it can be. And to that extent, so the ideas merge, that on the one hand, the Torah is accessible to all of us, but in order to really make a kinyan on it, so we have to take all of our potential and take all of our unique attributes and devote that towards the effort. And the notion of modesty and of humility is central here as well. We know, I think we discussed maybe a little bit last week, that Har Sinai is a mountain, but it's not the highest of mountains. It's a humble mountain. And if you read the Hakdama to the Sefer Pri Yitzchak, the Pri Yitzchak was the Chuvis of Rav Yitzchak Blazer, who was one of the great students of Rav Yisrael Salanter, who wrote the Koch Ve'or, the Musa Sefer, and he also wrote the Chuvis Pri Yitzchak. So he notes also a type of steerer that seems to come here, that we find the idea of Mimidbar Matana, that the Torah was given to us as a gift in the Midbar, but it's also called a lekach tov, and a lekach would seem to mean a purchase, something that we pay for. And he discusses there that there is a joint effort when it comes to Torah. There's a combination that to a certain extent it's given to us by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's a matana, but what we do through effort, the way we make it a part of ourselves, so that is the lekach, that is how it is a acquisition, a purchase, and we need humility, we need anivus to make sure that we are going to interpret it correctly and that we are going to bring it into our personalities in an effective way. So this is really true about everything. Everything in life is a combination of siyata d'shmaya and our own effort in order for us to get anywhere. But when it comes to Torah, that's especially true. And Rav Schechter relates often that he had a meeting with the stipler. He met the stipler, went to his house, and he asked him for a bracha for things. And the stipler gave him a bracha for the things he was asking about, but he also asked him for a bracha in learning. And the stipler said, "Dad, I'm not going to give a bracha in learning. That you have to do on your own," which is an interesting idea, because we certainly believe, the Gemara says, that to hold on to your learning at least is siyata d'shmaya. And as Rav Lachman likes to emphasize, that if you don't think you need siyata d'shmaya in learning, you should reflect upon the fact that we say every day in Brechas Kriya Shema, Avinu Av Harachamim Hamarachim Rachim Aleinu V'sein B'libeinu L'havinu L'haskil, that we're clearly asking for divine assistance in our learning. So it would seem that it's both, that on the one hand we need the siyata d'shmaya, And together with that, it's only going to really take root within our personalities if we give tremendous effort and if we really put all of our kochos into it. And Shavuos is what's really central to this, because Shavuos is about recapturing the excitement of the Torah and reigniting the passion for learning Torah. And it's a time when we, as the Magen Avraham points out, we fulfill the mitzvah of remembering Maamar Har Sinai, of not only the content of the Torah should be something that we hold on to, but the experience of Maamar Har Sinai and the excitement and the passion and the enthusiasm that comes from such a dramatic display, all of that the Torah tells us specifically we have to remember, we have to hold on to. And Shavuos is a time to allow ourselves to celebrate that event and to make sure it's a constant part of our awareness, so that when we're learning, as the phrase goes, that we should be so excited about our learning that it's the same as when it was given at Har Sinai, that having that excitement as a constant part of how we relate to things is crucial, and Shavuos is what helps to reinforce that within us. And the Gemara has that mysterious line that even when it comes to Yontif in general, there's a machlokus in the Gemara whether the day should be Kulo Lashem, should it be devoted purely to spirituality, or should it be Chatzi Lachem v'Chatzi Lashem? Should it be some combination of focusing on your own needs through eating and drinking and the like, and focusing on spirituality? And the Gemara says that when it comes to Shavuos, Hakol Bo'inan, Hakol Modim Deba'inan Nami Lachem, everyone agrees that Shavuos requires some aspect of celebration. And one way to understand that, there's much that's written about that, but one way to understand that is that to keep our excitement about the Torah alive and to make sure it's associated with that which we enjoy is one of the crucial messages of Shavuos. And the idea of staying up all night, and I know that there'll be different approaches to that one way or another in this year's unique circumstances, but it's something that represents the combination of the two, that on the one hand, it's a way to get a lot of content learned, hopefully, and it's a way to show yigia and effort to put a lot of hours in, but it's also a experiential event. It's something that is exciting in its own way. It's something that's different from a typical day, and it gives this uniqueness to what we are celebrating, and it's something that we work to incorporate within our personality. So both of these themes of the first Aliyah of Sefer Bamidbar and Parshas Bamidbar, the idea of the imagery of the desert and all of the different ideas that emerge from that, together with the very delicate balance that we bring towards counting, recognizing that counting, on the one hand, could be dehumanizing if an individual is reduced to a number, and we're told to be extremely careful to avoid that, but that when counting is seen as part of a context, when it's seen as plugging all these individuals into the national mission, so then it's something which is very beneficial. And the whole idea of Sfiras HaOmer, which is what makes Shavuos possible, maybe we'll talk a little bit more about that next week, we'll decide what to address, but the idea that Shavuos only is possible after we carefully count every part of what's along the way, and to recognize the idea, as we emphasized a week or two ago, think that counting Sfiras HaOmer is not simply saying numbers, it's seeing it as part of a context. It's seeing day five not as only a opportunity to say the number five, but seeing it as following four and preceding six. So too, counting Jews, if we're going to reduce them to numbers, that's something that's very dangerous. And Chazal and the Torah explicitly associates with Magefa that we're so sensitive to right now, so we work so hard to have the opposite type of mentality. But On the other hand, the idea of counting like we require by Sfiras HaOmer, recognizing that it is only meaningful because it's a part of the unit, because it's a part of the whole, that's something that we also work very hard on recognizing and appreciating. As Sfas Emma says on the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, "Emeina nili mili hushani la'atzmi mani." So on the one hand, "Emeina nili mili," if I am not for myself, who will be? So Sfas Emma says it means that no one else is able to develop our unique personality. Each one of us is special and unique, and no one else is able to be who we can be, and no one else can work to develop our character and what we can contribute for us. Only we can be ourselves, and only we can do what's necessary in order to become that person. But we also have to recognize, why are we doing this? We're doing this because we are a part of the klal, we are a part of the tzibur, and we recognize the unique contribution that we can make as part of the tzibur. So that's the rest of the Mishnah, that yes, I have to be for myself, I have to recognize who I am and how I am responsible for fulfilling that potential, while also recognizing that kishani la'atzmi mani, if I was doing that just for myself, for my own purposes, then what kind of an accomplishment is that? But when I see that it's for the klal, it's for the tzibur, so then it's in that setting that my unique potential can make its greatest contribution. So it's a delicate balance, and that's part of what our parsha reminds us. And the theme of the balance is the connecting element between both of these ideas, that we are balancing our individuality together with the role it plays in the tzibur, and we're balancing our recognition of how the Torah is a gift to us from God with the necessity of our own labor in order to make that gift fully alive within us. And the more we are able to be aware of the need for the balance in both of these areas, the greater hope that we have that we'll be able to truly honor this balance and truly become all we can be, both as individuals and as a tzibur. So I will leave you with that message for Shabbos. God willing, we will connect next week as well. I wish you hatzlacha in all the other challenges that you have this week. If you have any more finals and all of the other difficulties that we're trying to navigate. And I wish you all the continued safety and health. And hatzlacha, and I will be in touch with you soon.
Thank you, Rabbi.